You're listening to a Dom and Jeremy podcast. Your boys in the morning on Mix 100.
Quick note, we finished watching the second and final season of The Imposters on Netflix. I didn't, and I was like, oh, I wonder when season three will start. Well, there is no season three. And
right.
The interesting thing, I did some research on it. The show was originally on the Bravo channel, Bravo Network. And I guess the ratings during season two slipped a little bit. So they were like, eh, we'll just cancel it. Oh. So when season two was over, they stopped. Well, it wasn't until, a couple of years later that the show developed a big fan following on Netflix. It showed up on Netflix and suddenly people love it. And now I would imagine people over at Bravo and or at Netflix are going, oh, what do we do now?
Those actors are rubbing their hands together. They're like, let's do it.
They should.
Mama needs a new BMW. Let's do it.
Get the band back together again.
That's
right.
Let's
go. That's such a good show.
I got to watch it.
So well written, so well acted. And I didn't know anybody. I didn't know any of the actors, which was the best part. And it was so much fun. I was just kind of, it's one of those things, you know, a series ends and you're like,
I like these people.
I feel a little empty. I need closure is what I need.
Oh, buddy.
I need closure. I got to find some. Oh, we're moving on to season five of The Expanse. That's that sci-fi series that also is terrific if you're into that kind of space stuff.
Narcos Mexico is the one you need to watch next. I am devouring it. It is so good, man.
Any of the old Narcos actors?
Yes. The episode I watched last night, they have a few of them in there. It's really good. The last one was the followings of Pablo Escobar and the marijuana trade. This one is going into Mexico in the 80s again and all the drug cartels. And they're doing marijuana and cocaine in this one. Yeah.
Look at you.
It's so funny because I hate all these true crime shows because they're too violent and da-da-da. But drug cartels, man, I'm into that.
You watch that all day
all
long.
All day long.
There's violence in that, too.
So much violence in this show.
Yeah, so what made
I don't know, and it's so good. And it is one of those shows where 80% of it is in Spanish, so I've been watching so much of it, I feel like I can speak Spanish now.
You're beginning to habla?
My internal editor, I'm saying things in Spanish. I've been watching this so much, so I might be fluent.
I remember that from when I watched the show a few years ago, same thing. You were right. You told me about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you were right. After you watch it, you
It's happening again.
You know, I've heard from many people who've said that they have family members who, you know, even 40, 50, 60 years ago or whatever, came over as immigrants. And that's how they learned English was from watching television.
Yeah.
Who was it? There's a professional like that. I want to say he was an NBA player or baseball. It was a baseball player. And I don't remember if he came from Venezuela or something like that, but he said he learned English from watching soap operas because most of the baseball games were at night.
Yeah.
So during the day, he watched soap operas. And that's how he picked up English. And I was always laughing at myself. I was like, what kind of English is he picking up? I mean, is he learning
He's very seductive now.
Right.
Yeah.
Is he speaking very dramatically?
I can see it, man. I am learning all sorts of Spanish words that I probably, a lot of naughty ones too, Dom, that I'm learning. Hmm. You know, I was talking earlier about how Nicole is so hooked on Bridgerton. She was talking last night about how her internal editor now has got a bit of an accent when she's talking inside her head. I need to pack the children's lunches. So she's like, she's finding it hard to click that off because she is seeing the accent and hearing it so much.
I
think it's adorable.
I live that in my house. They are not, the two ladies in my house are not watching Bridgerton yet. But for whatever reason, for the last few months, Zoe will occasionally just break out into her British accent.
Stepfather.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
But it's just randomly, like for no reason.
You know, she'll come in and ask,
you know, like, what are we having for dinner? But she'll say it, you know, like she's, you know, I don't
what
know,
are
Princess
we having
Margaret
for dinner?
Yeah.
Stepfather, we're out of cereal.
It's just like that.
Well, I'm making Nicole call me the Duke of Littleton, so it's really cute when she says it in her little.
On the little.
Littleton.
Tiny Town is more like it.
The Duke go, Tiny Town.
I think that's going to be your new. That's going to be my new name for you.
Ride that little train, huh? so cranky. Good. So good. What were we going to talk about?
I don't know. Oh, last week. This doesn't have to be a big, huge conversation, but we just wanted to, I don't know, address it because we found it interesting. We were talking last week. I think we were talking about plumbers because down in Texas, there was one particular, I mean, all the plumbers were absolutely inundated with requests with, you know, broken pipes and all that other stuff. But there was one particular one. He was in Austin and he was talking about how his business had been called 2,200 times in a 24-hour period with people who needed help with burst pipes or, you know, whatever the problem might have been from the big deep freeze that hit down there. And we were talking about 22, that's almost 100 calls per hour for his services. And I was pointing out how there are businesses like that that I always wonder how somebody in a field like that manages the psychological impact of knowing that your job requires that people be in misery of some sort.
It's funny to think about. Yes.
If you work in a, like my daughter-in-law works in the emergency room. She's a nurse in an emergency room. Well, her entire existence essentially is based on other people's misery. I mean,
getting hurt, getting sick, getting things,
getting whatever, and she's there to help them. Right?
Yes.
The plumbers, it's people's misery. If you're in a car repair business where you're, you know,
repairing
dented fenders and stuff.
Sure. If you start thinking about it, it's like almost a majority of jobs, right?
Is that right, though?
Like maybe you're a dermatologist. So, yes, you've got dealing with people with skin issues that are
Dr. Pimple Popper.
Dr. Pimple Popper. Exterminators. You've got pests.
Bugs.
Skunks. You need an exterminator. You have the police officers, firefighters.
Morticians.
Funeral directors. Yes, yes. The list is long.
Until we really start talking about this, it hasn't ever dawned on me the number of people who make a living off of other people's misery. And again, before anybody gets all defensive, we're not saying anything about the people.
Industry, you're fine. But if you think about it, I'm trying to think of one that wouldn't be.
Morning radio show
hosts? I mean, we don't fall. There's got to be some sort of something.
Although
that,
people could say, well, I wake up, I'm in a really bad mood.
Or you guys make me miserable. We're making people miserable.
Well, we get those messages every once in a while, too, on Facebook.
Yes, we do. Oh, that's crazy to think about. Trying to think of any more that would a realtor, but maybe you know there's a divorce situation. You're miserable. You need a new place. Then they step up. Hey, I'll help you.
Okay, so here's the question. And I asked Gretchen this over the weekend. I said, if you are in that position, because her background was in sales, and I'm like, I don't know if that's necessarily somebody. I don't know if that involves misery of any kind, but. But we were just talking about it, and I asked her, I said, what would that do to your psyche if you knew that the only people, like a plumber, nobody calls a plumber, really, I mean, rarely, there are instances, but rarely does somebody call a plumber where they're not in distress.
Where they're, knee-deep in poo.
So on one hand, it could be like, man, I wouldn't have a job if people weren't in misery. But on the other hand, you're like,
you're rolling up in your new $70,000 pickup to help them out. I'm sure you're doing fine. Like roofers, man. I mean, do you feel bad that you pray for hailstorms? Come on, hail.
Is it on one hand you know you're dealing in misery, but on the other hand you feel like the knight in shining armor because you are rushing to the rescue
of
people?
You are providing a service and you are helping people out and you're banking off of it.
Like my daughter-in-law in the ER, right? She is coming to the rescue of people. If you're a plumber, you're coming to the rescue of people. If you're
absolutely. You're a superhero, essentially. Yep.
It's all how you spin it, isn't it?
Again, those guys are making bank.
I make money off of people's distress or I'm a superhero.
But then you get yourself in the mindset that after I arrive and help them with their distress, they are then happy. So then you have to focus on when I leave, I'm leaving a happy person.
Well, not necessarily because if it's the plumber, then
yeah. Yeah, you're right. Never mind, I was stupid.